Profiles in Teaching with Technology is a podcast series created by Music First, a company dedicated to providing world-class cloud-based tools, content, and classroom management platforms to music teachers around the world. Each episode features a K-12 music educator who uses technology to enhance their teaching in innovative ways. We'll discuss the what, why, and how of their technology integration and hopefully share some teaching strategies that you can use in your own classroom. For more information about Music First, please visit www.musicfirst.com. There you'll be able to find out about all of our platforms, as well as sign up for a free 30-day trial. Dr. Cecil Adderley is chair of the Berklee College of Music's Music Education Department in Boston, Massachusetts. He has over 38 years of teaching experience at the junior and senior high school level, as well as the college level. He has performed professionally in the Charlotte Community Band as a clarinetist and the Asheville Symphony Orchestra as a violinist. He served as a U.S. congressional intern on Capitol Hill, chair of the Northborough School Committee, member of the Northborough Cultural Council, NJMEA as the higher education representative, and as an adjudicator for the Drum Corps International and past president to the Massachusetts Music Educators Association. Dr. Adderley has written and published in the Journal of Research in Music Ed, Choral Journal, Contributions to Music Education, Journal of Band Research, Southeastern Journal of Music Education, and Strategies for Teaching Technology. Cecil is also one of the contributing authors to Musical Experience in Our Lives, Expanding the Boundaries of Music Education, Music in Motion, an Overture to the Student Experience in the Outdoor Music Ensemble. Dr. Adderley holds a BS from Western Carolina University, a Master's from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, and a PhD from the University of South Carolina. In addition, he serves on the NAFME Equity Committee, NAFME Music Teacher Profession Advocacy Committee, ISME Advocacy Committee, and is currently the President-elect of NAFME. So this week, I have the honor of having Dr. Cecil Adderley on the podcast. I've known Cecil for quite some time, both at his work at Berklee. I've been up there a bunch of times, but I recently was so happy to cast my vote for him as the NAFME president-elect. So you'll be, I think, starting in 2026, you'll be running the organization. Cecil, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the kind words, Jim. Yes, we've gone back a long way.
Yeah, I think, you know, didn't you teach at Rutgers like a long time ago?
Yeah, I was at Rutgers prior to coming to Berklee. Yeah.
That's probably around the time that I was either graduating or teaching at Montclair State. So we're fellow Jersey. The way I like to start every podcast is to have my guests trace their history, like going back to when you were in school. What got you excited about music? At what point did you realize you might want to be a music teacher? And then kind of the course of your career from, you know, when you started teaching up to your present position. And you could do that in about 10 minutes. That's the usual deal.
So that's always a funny conversation when you think about people entering education.
Yep.
And was that the original career path? Well, music was always a part of both my brother and our lives, because my mother, you know, always sang around the house. Both my parents were educators. My mother was a home ec teacher, and my dad, social studies and administration. You know, she served as our first piano teacher until she moved us on to one of the community music teachers around the corner from our house, Virginia Cofield,
mm-hmm.
who was instrumental, I think, in getting a lot of kids in the neighborhood interested in music. She probably taught every kid in that neighborhood.
That's awesome.
Seriously, every kid in that neighborhood who had an interest in music and then venturing off into something else started probably in her piano studio. She was an anchor in that community. She played at one of the local churches, was also an educator, and brought a lot of possibilities to that experience, so that she started getting not only just the performance aspect, but she also mixed in theory. And I st stayed with her until she recommended I move on to one of the colleges that was nearby where I could study even more advanced keyboard when I got older. And that's where I was also taking my violin lessons at that same college. So, fast forward a few years, I think one of the things that changed for me and probably for my brother as well, the opportunities that were in our school and in our community at the time for both band and orchestra. And growing up in the South, you grow up around a lot of performing musicians. Not that you don't see as many teachers in the communities today that are also gigging musicians. I think there at the time with the wedding band scenes, the beach music scene, and everything else that was going on at the time, there were a lot of performance opportunities for educators in those communities who were teaching, but also for some students that we were lucky enough that many of us could find, part-time gigs, which was great for a young kid.
Absolutely.
And I wish there were more opportunities like that nationwide, so that students could find out early on if they have a desire to do this for a living, they could have an opportunity to actually get their feet wet and see what that life might be like for them. Is it appealing or not? And it's kind of like that middle school concept of trying out a lot of things to see if one thing fits. Having those types of opportunities allows you to see if those things actually fit.
Absolutely.
And I think I was fortunate enough to have had some of those opportunities. Some really strong and dedicated teachers, like I said, like Virginia Cofield, like Willie Lyles, who was our high school band director.
Where did you grow up?
Columbia, South Carolina.
Oh, very cool. All right.
Columbia, South Carolina. I didn't come to Jersey till much, much later in life.
All right.
Always have family there, but yeah, growing up in the Carolinas was a part of my foundation and a memorable part of my musical journey.
Absolutely.
And I think that was an important part of that, setting the foundation for what comes later. Because I think at that, it gave me an opportunity to see what some of the possibilities are, even if a community doesn't have all the resources that they would typically need. I think, typically need to what people perceive as successful. And I think success has many different there are different many different models to measure success. I
Absolutely.
think in that model where I grew up, I think one of the things that looking back on that, saying that was successful, having the opportunity to learn to write and arrange early, which most students don't get an opportunity to do the way programs are designed. Looking back on that, I'm like, wow, that was a really cool opportunity that not so many kids today have had that experience. And there are other people who have had those experiences. I used to have those conversations with the late Robert W. Smith.
Oh, yeah.
He was a great arranger and had that
Absolutely.
opportunity, growing up. So why can't other people have some similar experiences, knowing that if you give a student an opportunity to try something, if you're willing to nourish that and encourage that, it can blossom into something, really, really great. So, trying to get back on
Yeah,
the
no, you so you decided to do music in college?
I decided to do music in college. Yes, leading into college. So prior to that's where I was going with this. Prior to that, my father really wanted my brother and I to be medical doctors.
There you go.
And I think that's probably one of those things your parents always want their child to be a doctor or a lawyer. And we took all of the preparatory courses, and I realized probably up through middle school, at one point that I'm not so sure this is for me. I was not a fan of blood.
Yeah, there you go.
Music was an important part of my life. And I think by the time you get to high school and you're in all county and you're getting into regions and all state and things like that, you start to see that there's some possibilities. You like working with other students. So at that point, I wanted to give, music education a shot, thinking that I could probably do this. I had already had some private, piano students of my own when I was a high school student, just to make a little extra money. So now was the time to really, see if I could do this.
Right.
I completed my undergraduate at Western Carolina University in Cullowhee, North Carolina. Had a wonderful time there. Met some really outstanding educators. The late Maxie Beaver really took me under his wing. Ralph and Rebecca Caldwell, who I student taught with and still remain in contact with.
Oh, that's cool.
Bob Buckner and others, just some great people that come across your path, and you have an opportunity to learn from these folks. You start to see some of the possibilities, even if they were different than your own. The idea, and I think that's just like anything else. You take ideas from other masters, and then try and make some of it your own
Yep.
through application in the environment that you're in. And realizing that just because one thing is done successfully in one environment does not necessarily mean that's going to translate to your environment, but you need to have the initiative and the drive to take some of the ingredients from something else that's working and make it your own. It's kind of like cooking.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
You can buy a lot of great cookbooks. You can watch every cooking show on the Food Network, but you've got to understand they're in a studio. There are a lot of people around them, and they make it look absolutely perfect. And it's not until you start to try it and think about what you can buy locally with your own local ingredients, to say, well, will this dish turn out just like that? And that's the same thing that happens in teaching.
Oh man, I mean, my wife and I are addicted to the Food Network, and I do all the cooking. I am so on board with that analogy. It's awesome.
During COVID, I'm sure I gained a lot of weight just
Me too.
because I was able to try a lot of things I really didn't have time to before. But and that's no different in arts education. I think the teachers I've had up to this point were able to experiment with the students who are in front of them, and I would take as many of those ideas and use them in my classrooms to say, hey, if that worked there, what bit of that can I take to make my own? Because I'm not so sure I can replicate the entire thing the way they did it.
Right.
Maybe I didn't have the time or all the resources they had to make it work. But sometimes just in my ability to be patient and my ability to give some things a try, that things worked out a lot better than I anticipated.
Yeah.
But my time at Western, after leaving Western and teaching in the Charlotte Mecklenburg schools, things just started to take off. I was fortunate enough to be surrounded by two really great music supervisors at the time that were very supportive, that believed in arts education. And the school district was huge at that time. I mean, we were one of the 10th, I think we were the 10th largest school district in the country at that time. And so arts were an important part of that community. And Charlotte at the time was starting to become a sports mecca. It was already a NASCAR mecca because you had the Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Right.
You had all the NASCAR money that was coming through that community. But to then see, the Hornets come out of nowhere when they wanted to bring basketball to Charlotte, then they wanted to bring football to Charlotte. It was as though Charlotte was trying to become the next Atlanta.
It is an amazing city.
It's an amazing city, and to watch it grow during that time, and this was between 85 and 92, there was a lot of development in that in Mecklenburg County. So programs were pretty big. The schools were huge. So there was always a possibility to create a lot of things going on for all of the arts and music. So you saw some really strong band, choir, and orchestra programs. Jazz bands were really big at that time. Choir was still king. As it should be, because I think the thing that a lot of people saw in some of the communities, you started to see, kind of the rise of these super churches.
Yep.
And with those community choirs, a lot of that those directors were directly recruiting out of some of these schools
That's
and
right.
communities. So the school choirs were booming at the same time. And I think that was a positive, it had a positive impact on arts education because you had more people in the community singing. And when people in the community can sing, in my opinion, all the other forms of music education are much easier to teach just because they've started singing prior to doing something different.
Did you just I'm just sorry because I did you know Mark Probst? Was he one of the supervisors or was he not there when you were in Charlotte?
That probably has happened after my time because when I was there, it was Barbara Kajan and Ed Benson.
I knew Mark. I've done some staff development down for Charlotte Mecklenburg. It's an amazing place. Absolutely. So how'd you get into higher ed? I mean, how long did you teach in the classroom and then
I got into higher ed while I was a graduate student. I took a leave of absence from my teaching position with every intention of going back.
Right.
So in 92, I took a graduate assistantship at USC. And at that point,
Now, wait, is that University of South Carolina or University of Southern California?
USC, South Carolina.
There you go. That's right.
I always laugh about that because that always comes up. USC or USC?
Sorry, I had to ask. I'm
Well,
sure people
yeah,
would have.
Carolina Gamecocks.
There you go. That's right.
And Charlie Elliott brought me in. And at that time, what I was going to be doing was the Yamaha MIE program
Ah, that's right.
to teach technology. And I would continue teaching in the Richland One schools as part of my graduate assistantship, electronic music.
Very
So
cool.
they sent me off to I guess the training for that was at Ohio State back in the early 90s.
Yep.
So,
Were you there with Bob Stevens from Montclair?
oh my God, to remember all the people who were involved.
Yeah, I know. So Bob, so I w when I first got to Montclair in 1988, Bob Stevens had an original MIE lab in the music building, and I started training kids from Newark Arts High School, and he was like one of the original four sites for the MIE lab. I just thought you might have crossed paths because you're also, did some time in Jersey.
Yeah, so we probably have because I'm thinking about and those early MIE keyboards, and I'm not even sure that technology still exists anymore. I think.
It's it there are a lot of there are a lot of MIE labs growing dust.
Okay, that's what I thought. But that was my gig for the 3 or 4 years I was at Carolina. And my last, as I'm working on my dissertation, a job comes open at Benedict College in Columbia, South Carolina. So I resigned my teaching position back in Charlotte that I'm telling them I'm not coming back. And then I started at Benedict College, a historically black college there in Columbia, right around the corner from USC.
Very cool.
And I'm in the music department, the fine arts department there. And that's the beginning of my higher ed experience. And so I spend, but I'm there for 4 years. And then Rutgers, the 6 years there. And then since 2004, I've been at Berkeley.
That's awesome. That's
Yeah.
awesome. So what a very cool path. And I know that my listeners, because I hear from them, I know they love hearing how people got to where they are. So thanks so much for going over that. Now, this podcast is coming out in April. In February, I cast my vote for you because I knew you and I was like, oh, this would be so
Oh,
cool.
thank you.
So
Thank you.
congratulations on becoming the next NAFME president after Deb Confredo's tenure. And you're now the third consecutive NAFME president I've interviewed. I interviewed Scott Sheehan, current Deb Confredo coming up, and you. So how did you get
Oh,
involved
wow.
with NAFME? How did you get involved? Why did you want to, like, tell me how this whole thing came about?
Well, I think like most collegians, you get involved with NAFME while you're a college student. But fast forward, years into teaching, I think starting in some of the leadership roles, those things changed when I was at Rutgers, really. And I become the higher ed rep in New Jersey. And I want to say Nick Santorum might have been the president at that
Oh, yeah,
time.
I remember Nick very well.
So I was the New Jersey higher ed rep for my time there. And then I moved to and enjoyed that work with, NJMEA, good group of people there. And then I come to Massachusetts and I'm still involved in things that are going on, with our, student chapter. Libby Allison is the faculty advisor and she's always assisted by, Stephanie Langle. And then the late Faith Luth,
Oh, Faith, I miss her very much so.
we all do. We all do. She has been instrumental in getting a lot of people involved. She was instrumental in getting a lot of people involved in Massachusetts.
Yep.
And she thought I should consider running for the hired rep and put my name in for that. Then years later, for president elect of Massachusetts. And then when I'm, president, I'm president elect, things are going along well with the organization. Then COVID hits. Getting through that was a challenge during my presidency because that was something none of us were prepared
Oh,
for.
that's right. What an interesting time to be
Yeah,
finally
to
president
leave
and wham.
president, right?
Yeah.
We're at Allstate, and it's during my first year as president, and we're having to make a decision because right down the street, where one of the pharmaceuticals was having their conference, that's where they ha were having that first outbreak in Boston.
Oh, that's
And
right.
we're making the decision we've got to wrap things up and get kids home.
That's right, because MMEA is always like right around St. Patrick's Day. Wow, interesting.
So two conferences right down the street from each other, and one is having a problem, and we're trying to avoid that problem.
Oh, man.
So I learned a lot about patience. I learned a
I'm
lot
sure.
about the things that you can control and can't control. And that there has to be a better tomorrow. Because all things are, maybe that's just the way I was raised, all things in due time, and this too shall pass. And I think that's how you have to approach some of these things, is that no matter how well educated you think you are, how well you plan, there's always going to be a curveball. And I think your reaction to the curveball coming at you, and your ability to slow that down in your mind to say, do I take a swing or do I let this become a ball? And I think only through experience, you know which one, what reaction you need to do based on your experience. Because sometimes I think we get up to bat and everything's you have to swing at every ball. I'm like, not really.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, you might not need to swing at every ball. Sometimes you have to just let one pass, and that's a ball. I think that was one of the things I learned during that, that COVID presidency. So the leadership roles like that bring out either the best and worst of each of us. And they provide us an opportunity to grow, because if we can figure out how to make it good for ourselves, in turn, it's good for everyone else. The idea is for everyone to believe that you're not just doing something selfishly, but you're really taking everyone's concerns into consideration, so that they know this is in the best interest for the students that they too are teaching. Because we want arts education to be here today, and we definitely want it to be here tomorrow, in many different forms, as our society and as technology changes. And the needs of our society, change. So having that opportunity to participate in the arts all these years, having this great opportunity to serve in a leadership role, has been eye-opening to all the possibilities that are ahead of us.
Yeah, and I think from the work that you're going to do and the work from the folks that you're going to follow, I know that I feel personally as like a lifelong member of NAFME that that the organization is definitely headed in the right direction. I'm very excited about the new leadership, and I look forward to your tenure there. I know you're going to do
Thank you. Thank you.
fantastic things. So let me switch the conversation now to technology. And I know that you got started with, the MIE lab, but what's your general, I mean, you've been in higher ed, you're, working with music ed students for quite some time now. What is your, I would love to hear from you what your take on the role of music technology in a music program, just writ large. Like where do you see it?
I see it as central and essential, because let me put it in many different, in a couple of forms. One, I think when we look at how it can be used in an ensemble setting, is one thing. Technology has always been there, especially when you think about what has happened in some of the pop, rock, and jazz groups over the years. And having the opportunity to have some things that were beyond the traditional acoustic, and looking at, when people were starting to bring, and this is going way back, people bringing in the ARP synthesizers into some of the pop rock and jazz groups, because that's what you were seeing out in, in the performance space. And so a lot of the kids in the 70s, and if their schools had that equipment, you were starting to see some of the synthesizers pop in, and teachers were experimenting with that. And I'll never forget seeing my first electronic drum set, which and I'll be honest with you, when I first saw it, I was not a fan. However, for the parents whose kids wanted to play drum set, and they could hand them a headset, and the kids just go to town on it, and it kept the peace at home. I was like, wow, somebody really thought this through. And it wasn't until I became a high school director and one of my students had one of those, and I thought to myself, wow, it's a little pricey, but I saw the possibilities there.
I just got to stop you there. I grew up, my brother Mark is a phenomenal drummer. He was in Blue Man Group for 17 years. And growing up with a drummer who live, would play every single day in the basement as loud as he possibly could. I remember when he got a Roland drum machine and we were all like, "Thank God." Man, you hit the nail on the head, man. As somebody who grew up with a drummer, man, that was a great day.
Because a neighbor 2 doors down from our house, because I thought about that just when I thought that for a minute. I'm thinking on our street, and this is what I'm telling you, Miss Cofield taught everyone our neighborhood. So a couple of houses down, they had a piano. I mean, most people kept their doors open. It's the South, everybody didn't have air conditioning at first. So you would hear people practicing. You could hear a piano down the street. We had our piano. 2 doors down, one neighbor, their family had their drum set in the carport.
That's
So
awesome.
the entire neighborhood could hear this kid play. He was an incredible drummer. I mean, incredible drummer. People across the street playing piano, that person playing piano. And it was just funny to hear all this music happening. But the drummer is the one that you're thinking, imagine if they had had the electronic drums back.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think the role going back to the role of technology, I think we're at a point where you can see the applications for what happens in an ensemble, what happens outside of an ensemble. And I think even with the the inclusion of what's happening with AI, the possibility of what could be done not only with music or with film scoring or just anything in creativity that the arts learners of tomorrow might want to experience, we're probably at that turning point where we're able to imagine some things that we couldn't before. And I say that when I look at some of the stuff that they talk about, where now we're getting the AI, where it's what text to image, you're telling it to draw. Imagine if we could tell a story with artificial intelligence and it suggests a score to come along, create along with it. So maybe we're at a point where we have technology that will allow the learner to dream, visualize what story they want to tell, but and at the same time, create the music to go along with that story that they're imagining.
No, I think about this stuff a lot. My blog, that's in fact, right after I finish speaking with you, I'm finishing up my blog post on all the GPTs other than ChatGPT. It's like this mind-blowing thing. And the students that I teach an undergraduate music tech course at Montclair State, and I said to them, they're all 19 years old. I've never taught that age group until now. And I said to them, you guys are literally right at the beginning of this whole thing. It's going to be your entire career, is you're going to be dealing with this. And us people with a couple of gray hairs on our head, we're trying to figure out what the heck, like, all we're worried about is our jobs being taken away.
Oh my God, yeah.
But in reality, you guys are going to be dreaming up how this stuff is used in the classrooms. It's
Yeah.
very exciting, but it's a little scary. I'm not going to lie, but it's also super exciting.
Well, I know people are afraid, but I always tell people what we have to think about in education, and it's not just arts education. I understand that sometimes we have taught the way we've always been taught, or we see things based on what's currently in front of us. But they're already, if you look into the future, we got to think about, well, where does the arts, or where do the arts fit in? We've had a few astronauts, that brought guitars and flutes up to space, and you already have another space race with, with
China.
Bezos and
Yeah.
Branson
Oh,
and
that's right.
others.
That's right. That's
So
right.
you got to think about that at some point. We need artists as a part of that, so that when that next step takes place, that we're part of that discussion as well. That we're going to be a part of life wherever it is,
Yep.
and it's not just about the hard sciences anymore.
That's very true. Did you, so when you were te I mean, were you going back to the MIE lab? Because I'm just fascinated because it was the way I started my career too. Was that your main job, or were you doing like choir, band, anything else? And because I'm interested
Oh.
where you think, I'm sure this will resonate with you. I speak about music tech all over the country at various conferences. And in certain areas of the country, band directors look at music tech purely as metronome, tuner, that's it. And then there are certain areas where it's completely the kids are writing their own music, they're using assessment software, they're doing all kinds of things. I just want to, get your idea on the other things you taught and where music tech might fit in not just, playing synths, but the kind of the broader brush, if you will, of how tech can be integrated into a music program.
So, if I understand the question, when I was teaching in Charlotte, it was junior high and high school band. And I would sub in orchestra when our orchestra teacher was called up to active duty. I was a clarinet major, but my principal, one of my principal instruments were piano and violin. So, it
Right.
was violin with the actual symphony. But when I taught, I was strictly teaching band.
Got it.
But when I went to USC, the graduate assistantship that was offered to me was the MIA program because
Got
I
it.
had some exposure to technology in the classroom with some of the classes I'd taken as a
Right.
graduate
And you're a
assistant.
keyboard player. Makes total sense.
I was a keyboard player. I had taken some tech courses as part of my master's at UNC Greensboro with, oh gosh, Mark Affelstadt, I think that's who was teaching at the time. So I wasn't afraid to tackle that, and
Right.
having the keyboard chops and looking at all the other possibilities. And I think too, because they had me in two alternative high schools.
Oh man, what a gig.
Oh my God, that was eye-opening.
Yep.
And one of the schools, which was really funny, some of the people who taught me were actually teachers who were teaching there at that time. So it was good to reconnect with them
Right.
and to have the support system at the time, just from the people from Yamaha.
Yep.
They were pushing this, fairly hard, and you could modify some things based on the needs of your students. And since it was at a high school, I had to modify a lot compared to, I think, the product was probably originally, the concept was probably more for middle grade, more than it would have been for high school students. But for the skill level, at this alternative school, it was just the right application for them, and to be able to experiment, to keep their interest, as older students, keep them involved.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, where I was going with that, sorry, it was a little unclear, is that, there are certain aspects of a music curriculum where tech just obviously fits in with in the quote unquote general music setting, where you're trying to make various aspects of music history, music learning, music theory, creativity, obviously, all those kind of things. But there's always been, in my opinion, a resistance on the performance side. Because they think, it's going to distract or take away. But yeah, I completely agree with you. I think meeting your kids where they are, for me, that was the primary motivation always for tech integration. It wasn't about me going, I'm going to force you to learn music technology. It was that my second job, I followed a teacher. It's always the greatest situation. I followed a dud of a teacher. And the superintendent, when they hired me, said, "You need to revitalize this music program. The middle schoolers hate general music." And I was like, "Ah, what a gig. Great. I can't wait to come in here." And I said, "Look, can I bring in some music tech? That'll get him excited." And he's like, "Yeah, what do you need?" And I bought the Soundtree version of the MIE Lab. That's how I got hooked up with Stephanie, and that's how I knew Lee Whitmore. And I just found that those kids loved it. I mean, they were like, I didn't have to try. They were really into what I was doing. And the superintendent was like, "You're doing a great job with middle school." I was just like, "'Cause I'm doing stuff the kids wanted to."
They want to do. And I think where people get hooked, some people are thinking, well, they're going to take my ensemble kids. I'm like, no, your ensemble kids are still going to be your ensemble kids. And the way
Absolutely.
I would always say that is that think about all the guitar players and the set players and the keyboard players who are part of your jazz band that were never a part of the other ensembles.
Exactly.
And it's the same thing with some of the students who are into technology or some of the other offerings you can have in a program, is that those are some of the other kids who would have never come into your classroom because what you were offering just wasn't of interest to them. So now you found another tool to bring more kids, more of the school population into the art space.
Yeah, no,
And
I
it's a
couldn't
great
agree.
opportunity.
Yeah, I came from a performing family, and my sister was in like 15 Broadway shows. And when she was in high school, the last thing she wanted to do was be a part of the music program, even though, when she was 16 years old, she became a Rockette and is singing at Radio City Music Hall, but she had no interest in doing it at school. And I asked her, I've said this numerous times, but I asked her, like, why? She's like, "Well, that wasn't the music I wanted to sing. That was, that was, they were singing like, classical music. I wanted to sing chip tunes right there." And, well, to be fair, in 1986, I don't think there was such a thing as show choir, or if they were, they certainly weren't in my neighborhood. Yeah, no, I love that take. So I got quickly, I have time for two more quick questions for you, Cecil, and I appreciate this. It's a great conversation. The first is, put your NAFME hat on for a moment and think about what advice you would give to music teachers who are thinking of incorporating tech into their classrooms.
If you're thinking of incorporating tech into your classrooms, I would probably say dream big. And look at the population that you want to serve today, but also look at the possibilities of what could help your community thrive tomorrow.
I love
That sometimes, and I know I've already said this, is that you might not necessarily need to focus so much on, is this something I'm going to use with all of the students who are currently in
right.
the program? And that might not necessarily be the case. It might be for some. And in some sense, because the way a lot of the technologies out there, Who's to say that it might not help you have a creative, more creative way of teaching, theory, ear training, all the other traditional applications of arts education. And it might make it easier for you to do that. And I think with the inclusion of AI in the future, that probably will be a whole lot easier, that the technology will probably be able to develop more efficient ear training exercises than it would take us time to create, because it'll self-learn. Looking at reaching some of the students who might not have been able to afford the traditional, band or orchestra instrument, this is an opportunity for those students to come into the art space, because it doesn't look like the traditional instrument. And it gives them an opportunity to start thinking of things in ways that they learn, and how they might learn differently than some of the other students. And the example I want to give on that is that, we've taught drumming one way for a long time. And then all of a sudden the drum machine shows up, and it and the early drum sounds, I'll admit, I was not crazy about them either. But the opportunity for a kid to learn all the different rhythms through
Absolutely.
touch pads and things like that that were not there before, might have provided a different type of stimulus that's what that learner needed in order to respond. And I think the opportunities to reach students we haven't been able to reach before, tech, technology, and what can happen with technology will open doors for us to reach all of those different types of learners.
I love it. That's great. All right. I've got time for one last question. It's the one that stumps a lot of people, but it's the magic wand. If you could wave a magic wand and have music technology do something that it can't do now, what would it be?
Ooh.
Is there an app there out there that you'd love to see? Is there a feature that you'd love to see? Is there something that it doesn't do?
I'm going to be a little cynical on this. The big thing that sometimes we pick at and we think about, there's auto tune out there now.
Oh yeah. I love it. I love it. How about we take that away?
Well, you might take it away, but and you have the Google Glass and now the was it the Vision Pro
Yep.
that I think probably at some point, AI will allow everyone to have perfect pitch.
Oh, that's right. Oh my God, that's a it'll show up in your vision what note you're hearing.
What note you're hearing? Yeah.
Oh, whoa.
I've
No, I think
been
that's,
thinking about that for years. I've been
yeah,
talking
no,
about this
that's
for
pretty.
years, and people would thought I was crazy. I was like, no, this could da 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 da. Because think about this. You've done this. We've done all these different cochlear implants. I said,
Yep.
it's only a matter of time before we can all have perfect pitch.
And that is deep. That is one of the deepest, coolest answers I've got. That is awesome. Now I'm thinking my brain is going a million miles an hour. Well, Cecil, thank you so much for taking time out of your day. And again, we are looking so much forward to your tenure at the helm of NAFME. I know it's in good hands. Hopefully, I'll be up in Berkeley in the next couple of months at Berkeley to see you.
Thank you. Thank
Time,
you.
I feel like everyone there are my dear friends. And so, yeah, I can't thank you enough. And I hope you have a great rest of your school year and a fantastic tenure at NAFME.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Profiles in Teaching with Technology from Music First. For more information about Music First, please visit www.musicfirst.com. If you would like to stay up to date with other music teachers doing innovative things in their classrooms with technology, please subscribe to our podcast through whatever outlet you listen to podcasts on. Thanks for listening.